Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Monday, May 8, 2017. The swearing-in of the National Dialogue Steering Committee has been suspended.
The percentage of the steering committee was only 20%, so we are waiting for to collect the number of the committee, members, at least to be 50-plus before they are sworn in.
And one prominent South Sudanese priest says President Kiir should step down.
How deep down the ditch do you want to run the country before you can realize that there is no country left for you now? People are leaving the country every day and you still claim you are in control? That is nonsense.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The swearing-in of the steering committee for the much talked about national dialogue has been suspended indefinitely due to lack of quorum. President Salva Kiir's spokesman says half of the committee members appointed by the president have yet to report for duty. Waki Simon Wudu has this report for VOA from Juba.
President Kiir said in February the national dialogue would begin sometime in early March, but there is doubt over whether the long-awaited exercise will start at all. Last month, presidential spokesman Atene Wek Atene said financial and technical challenges prevented the swearing-in of the committee charged with steering the dialogue. Yesterday, Atene announced the committee's swearing-in was suspended indefinitely.
Has been postponed until further notice because the percentage of the steering committee was only 20%. So we are waiting for to collect the number of the committee's members, at least to be 50-plus before they are sworn in.
Civil society activist Rajab Mohandis says the government has been inconsistent in its effort to get the dialogue off the ground ever since Mr. Kiir announced the initiative. He says delays in commencing the dialogue weaken the initiative and make citizens lose hope in its ability to end the ongoing conflict. Mohandis, who heads the South Sudanese Network for Democracy and Elections, says the indefinite suspension of the swearing-in happened because the committee is too large.
We have been to the states, and people are telling us in the states that they are confused about the process of the national dialogue. Today, the president makes commitment that, yes, the national dialogue will be conducted and is moving to swear in reconstitute the committee and swear in the members. You see, as he has been saying all this while. And then the following day, someone else comes and says, we don't have money for the national dialogue. Meaning whatever the president is saying will not happen because there is no money.
Mohandis says the government must have a clear channel of communication to build trust among the people that the dialogue will take place and make a difference. Mohandis says other top-ranking officials must also demonstrate the government's will. He says they have shown no practical steps to accompany their political statements on the process, including inflammatory statements such as calling other political parties terrorists. Mohandis says the government must first pare down the steering committee.
Putting together a robust committee that is sizable enough to run the process effectively will give people a sign of hope. And the committee should be able to move out to begin to talk to people that the new country is moving towards a national dialogue. Now, we only talk about forming the committee and we talk about the committee setting up, starting the process. But actually, there are no steps that are happening to show citizens that these words are being translated into action.
The government needs to engage other parties and discuss ways to end the fighting across the country in order to give citizens hope, according to Mohandis. And he says including all warring parties to the country's conflict is the only way to make the dialogue genuine. For VOA News, I'm Waki Simon Wudu in Juba.
A prominent retired South Sudanese Anglican priest is calling on President Salva Kiir to step down. Reverend Canon Clement Janda, who is also a member of the Council of States, was recently appointed by President Kiir to be on the steering committee of the National Dialogue. Canon Janda issued a statement over the weekend declining to be part of the steering committee, saying the process lacks credibility and is not inclusive enough to solve the South Sudan's conflict.
The current process of national dialogue is not going to bring peace to South Sudan. This is why I withdrew. If I knew it was really a genuine process that people could dialogue in order to bring peace to South Sudan, I would not have withdrawn.
And why do you think the process will not bring peace?
What has happened is that the decree of the 25th is an enlarged monologue. It is not changed in substance. You see, John, for it to be a dialogue presupposes several sides to the issue. And I have reason to believe that this is not going to be a dialogue, because I was even told that in the next day or two, or maybe today, the group, the so-called dialogue, were being sworn in. How do you swear in a group that is going to discuss issues freely, and you swear them to pay allegiance to what?
Reverend Clement Janda, you have a lot of experience. You worked with the All African Conference of Churches for many, many years, and that organization has been credited for resolving a lot of conflict around Africa. Now you're pulling out from a process that is supposed to bring peace to your country, and you're citing that the process is not transparent. What else is there left for your country to achieve peace?
Only and only if the leadership of the country begins to listen to people who talk constructively. Only when they are ready to sit together with those they disagree, then can we begin to see light at the end of the tunnel. Not that I agree with people who are in opposition, no. But I think that as a matter of principle, to get people really to talking about issues, nobody should be excluded.
Reverend Janda, if you are given an opportunity to speak to President Kiir today, what would you tell him?
I would tell him, my brother, in the name of the country and in the name of Jesus Christ, for whom you and I claim to be followers, just step aside and let somebody lead the country for an interim period of 30 months. Then you, Salva Kiir, or another person, including Machar, if you people really believe that you are still popular, wait until elections and let the country choose for itself a leadership. If that leader becomes Salva Kiir by election, I will say hallelujah. If that becomes Machar by election, I will say hallelujah. If it comes to any other person, I would say hallelujah, so long as people will have been elected by a credible process. I will tell Kiir, please step aside. How deep down the ditch do you want to run the country before you can realize that there is no country left for you now? People are leaving the country every day by drones. Thousands are living daily, and you still claim you are in control? That is nonsense.
In your five-point press release, let me just read the final point here. You were saying, finally, I noticed the majority of the membership of the National Dialogue Steering Committee are people who helped President Kiir to destroy our beloved country. What credibility is there for such persons to be in the National Dialogue? I mean, these are very strong allegation that you are putting here. Who are these people who are
it's not part of the process? It's not an allegation. It's not an allegation. Out of 94 members, 46 are members of the GN Council. And these are the people who have A, wrecked the country by creating first 28 states, and I know at the moment I think there are over 35 states and so on. The country is in chaos in terms of its management because of this type of splitting the country up on tribal lines. And they are right inside this so-called national dialogue. What credibility is there for them?
That's Reverend Canon Clement Janda, member of the Council of States. He was speaking to me from the Ugandan capital, Kampala. The number of child refugees who have fled South Sudan since the conflict erupted in December 2013 has reached the 1 million mark, according to the UN's Children Agency, UNICEF, and the UN's Refugee Agency, UNHCR. As INBO reports, both agencies say the grim milestone is a reminder of the devastating effects the conflict has had on the most vulnerable.
1 in 5 South Sudanese children have been forced to leave their home, according to Ron Redman, Senior Communications Officer for the UN High Commissioner for Refugees in New York. Redman says the development can only be described as tragic.
It's the world's youngest nation, and now it's facing one of the world's biggest tragedies.
Of the $782 million requested by UNHCR to assist refugees in the region, only 12% of the budget has been committed to the UN Refugee Agency. About half of UNICEF's request for $181 million has been met. Redman says over 75,000 unaccompanied refugee children have crossed the border to Uganda, Kenya, Ethiopia, Sudan, and the Democratic Republic of Congo, all of them in search of the most basic necessities.
They need food, they need water, they need shelter, they need sanitation. I mean, it's a nightmare. Seldom in any situation like this do you see so many children facing such horrendous circumstances. The trauma, the physical upheaval that they face, the fear, the stress that so many of them face is just part of the toll that this crisis is exacting.
Redman says children are also at high risk of being recruited by armed forces or other violent groups. They also face the risk of sexual abuse.
It's an entire generation that is in danger of being affected for life by this. You know, South Sudan has the highest percentage of children who are not in school of any situation like this in the world. The numbers of children who are facing malnutrition and hunger is growing by the day. The entire country, in fact, is facing famine. Some areas of South Sudan have already been declared famine areas. The reason for that is man-made.
Redman says children do not have the same coping mechanisms that adults have, and because of that, they are extremely vulnerable. Ayan Bior, VOA News, Washington.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, ambushes on the road between Juba and Bor lead to more deaths. Find out more when we come back.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
do you believe Africa can do without aid from Western powers? Why or why not?
Yes, we have so many things. We are blessed. As Africans, we have fertile soil. Without even applying like manure or something of that kind, you can still plant. We have so many things that can earn us living without getting aid from the Western countries.
Africa, with no aid from US, I think it's a big no. We are not yet there.
Africa has everything it needs. We have a population. We also have resources. What we need is actually leadership and a change of the value system.
Africa can do it. Africa is capable of doing that aid. One country, Libya, if Libya was able to do it without the Western aid, we are all able to do it.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus. Last Friday, gunmen from Terekeka State ambushed 3 vehicles traveling from Juba to Bor, killing at least 30 civilians, including women and children, according to Jonglei State officials. An official in Terekeka State says the civilians were killed in crossfire during fighting between youth from Bor and Terekeka. Terkeke officials say Boer gunmen attacked Jemeza County in Terkeke State. As Tito Justin reports for VOA from Juba, thousands of civilians were displaced by the fighting.
Jonglei State Information Minister Akech Deng says armed youth in Terkeke killed travelers at Jemeza and at the Sudan Safari along the Juba-Boer Road on Friday. Deng says the gunmen ordered the travelers out of their vehicles and killed them in the presence of security personnel who are supposed to protect them.
This happened in presence of the commissioner of Jemeza, and one SPLM colonel was there when all this killing taking place. The reason for the attack on Juba-Boer Road must be immediately investigated, because the death toll of the innocent civilian between Boer and Juba Road now has risen to 30, as I told you, people killed.
Deng says 5 people are still missing. He is calling on the national authorities to investigate the killings and arrest the perpetrators. He is calling on the Jonglei youth to remain calm as state government officials try to resolve the matter. Deng says Terkeke state authorities are responsible for allowing the killings of innocent civilians to take place in government-controlled areas.
We cannot do such thing in a country that we have constitution and leadership in a place. And we are talking about national dialogue. It is not right for ourselves to slaughter ourselves as a people of South Sudan.
Terkeke officials deny civilians were killed in cold blood in the presence of state officials. Terkeke State Information Minister Philip Ladu Jembeke says the civilians were killed in crossfire when armed men from Jonglei and Terkeke clashed over stolen goods.
It just in between Sichuan Zafari and Jemeza, so there was a heavy fight between the youth of both communities. So these people collapsed to fall into the crossfire where, there were some casualties. But I was told that there were 3 vehicles actually which fell into the crossfire. Now, the youth of Jonglei continue advancing to Jemeza.
Minister Jembeke says armed men set fire to houses in Jemeza and looted everything. He says 2 villages were burned to the ground during the fighting and roughly 4,000 civilians from 7 villages in Jemeza County fled their homes and are hiding in the bush.
The whole of East Bank has been displaced because of the fear that there were mass population of the youth from Jonglei mobilizing themselves coming. As I talked to the guerrilla commander, they were not able to control the youth from Jonglei because they were outnumbering them.
Jonglei and Terkeke state authorities say the area where the killings took place is now calm and that they are talking to armed men from both sides to prevent any future violence. Last month, Jonglei and Boma state youth accused each other of carrying out cattle raids on each other's communities. Government spokesman Michael McQuay told reporters on Friday following the weekly Council of Ministers meeting that the Juba government has set a high-level committee headed by First Vice President Taban Dengai to try to end intercommunal fighting.
It has been given an urgent mission to make contacts with the 2 communities and the governments of the 2 states, and that the committee will be moving, it will be going to the capitals of these 2 states to talk to the communities and to the governments of these 2 states so that they cease all these hostilities and resolve their issues through peace and dialogue.
McQuay says Juba expects authorities from the 2 states to talk to each other and resolve their differences peacefully. For VOA News, I am Tito Justin in Juba.
From Juba, we move to Wau, where municipal authorities have ordered police to relocate nearly 7,000 internally displaced persons camping at the Episcopal Church in Wau town to Masna Talib. Some IDPs have refused to leave, citing insecurity in Masna Talib. Mel Aguel Gok, the mayor of Wau, said the government has deployed more security personnel to the area, but activists say the government must provide more life-saving support to the IDPs. Michael Atit has the story for VOA from Juba.
IDPs and Episcopal Church personnel woke up on Thursday morning to see the entire compound surrounded by heavy military and national security personnel before the relocation of the IDPs began at mid-morning. Church leaders say they were not informed about the decision to relocate the IDPs. Speaking by phone from Wau, Reverend Samuel Madith, the Diocesan Secretary of the Episcopal Church in Wau, says he was surprised to see the IDPs relocated by force.
They did not inform us. Even I talked to Bishop about taking people from here. They say no. They didn't inform us. They didn't give us the letter of taking people out from the compound. So we just sitting silently. We're looking to them, but we don't have any problem. We don't have voice to talk.
Pastor Madith says the church is concerned about the welfare of the IDPs in the new location. In early April, thousands of the IDPs say they will not relocate to Masna because the area is not secure. 78-year-old Achala Angom fled violence from Kwarjina in February. Speaking in Arabic, Angom says she cannot go to Masna because she narrowly escaped death in the same area while fleeing to Wau.
I told the government that we are not going to Masna. We have come all through from the village seeking safety here in the town. So why should we be taken back again to the bush? I prefer even dying here in the town so that my body can be buried.
60-year-old Andrea Madut Ukelo fled the violence from Rojdojdong County. He says he was held by some good Samaritans who brought him to Wau because he is blind. Speaking in Arabic, Ukelo says relocating to Masna is a death sentence.
People are still being killed in town around here. And for a blind person like me, if I go to Masna, and at night if something happens, what am I going to do? The government is insisting on this relocation. Now I came to Onmis and I will stay here.
Wau Town Mayor Mel Aleogoch says the IDPs must go to the new location to receive food rations because the church cannot house all of them.
We see to it that it will not be good for those people who are producing for themselves to come and stay in the government idly. Since that we avail the security in that area, it would be better for the government to distribute them the land so that they cultivate for themselves.
Aleo says IOM and Oxfam will provide services in the area, including a healthcare center and a pump for water. Simon Utwol, a community activist who hails from Kwarjina Payam, says overall he welcomes the move.
It is not bad if the government plans that he is going to exert all its effort on protecting the civilian and putting them in a well-secured place. But the only worry is that how safety will they be? Will the government will be providing a full security personnel to protect them from any external aggression because that area is not safe all this time.
There are unconfirmed reports that President Salva Kiir plans to visit Wau. State authorities are struggling to keep the IDPs out of Mr. Kiir's sight. South Sudan in Focus was unable to reach the IDPs forcefully relocated to the new location. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Juba.
A group that helps children in war-affected communities reclaim their childhood is working with South Sudanese refugee leaders to prevent gender-based violence. South Sudanese who fled to Uganda say they will work with War Child Canada to end sexual violence in refugee camps. Mungume Debs Rwakarinj has this report for VOA from Kampala.
Elizabeth Nemaya resides at Rhino Camp, where she says sexual violence is all too common. Nemaya says she has witnessed several cases where men beat their wives and vice versa. She says many South Sudanese suffer from war-related trauma and resort to violence as the best solution.
Sometimes when she's the one bringing things at home, when the husband talked to her, she now became aggressive and then sometimes started fighting.
John Taban Felix, a leader at the camp, says he fled fighting in High Simba of Yei Town in June. Taban says he did not know that beating his wife is gender-based violence.
Yeah, it has happened even to me personally. My wife is trying to kick children here and there, so I got so angry also I slapped the wife. I didn't know that it's SGBV, but now I've learned that it is SGBV.
Dudu Grace also escaped violence in South Sudan and sought refuge in Uganda. She says another problem is that some parents still marry off their girls at a young age.
Here in the camps, we have found out that children are not in school, like the secondary school girls, and schools sometimes are very far from the settlement, so some of them are just at home, so they have decided to associate themselves with the boys and they just get married.
She says she will tell fellow refugees it is wrong to marry off their daughters when they are not yet adults. Robinson Odongo is a protection officer with All Child Canada, an international organization that has trained South Sudanese to recognize gender-based violence and urge people in their communities to end the practice. Odongo says many refugees are traumatized after witnessing various forms of violence in South Sudan. The UN and human rights watchdogs say murder, torture and rape have been perpetrated in South Sudan since fighting began in Juba in 2013 by men in uniform.
Everybody thinks I am so troubled, so don't disturb me, don't even touch me at all. So we want to bring a rehabilitation of hope in the minds of these people so that, you know, we appreciate the fact that you have gone into a lot of antagonism because of the war, but here we are here to cope up with a new life so that one day if we get into peace, we can go back and take a positive message back into the community.
Taban says the training he has received has taught him how to deal with gender-based violence cases. He says many victims do not want to report what has happened to them for fear of being stigmatized in the community.
Whenever there is an SGB cases, in the first place I have to go and analyze and investigate the case and identify exactly, establish which type of SGBV is that. If we know that it is a defilement case, also I'll be able to report to the organization. And if I establish it's a rape case, refer to the legal authorities, refer to the health services.
Taban says he also refers rape cases to health services as well as psychosocial personnel. Odongo says All Child Canada has formed gender-based violence protection task force that will help sensitize the community and report cases of GBV. For VOA News, I am Mugume, Davis Ruakarinj in Kampala, Uganda.
That's our show for this Monday. We now leave you with the song African Style by Kawaja Revolution.
Kawaja Revolution, yo. The mighty sun bandit dancer, African King song, yo.
I wanna dance, dance, African style, yeah. And I'm an internal love people, Africa. I would love to see my people dance. Let's do this together. Oh, oh, oh. Let's dance, yeah. Africa, my lugar, to be silu hilu. And I'm a bisibu. Lugar, tena tabe. Hey, yeah. Hey. Do good, do good, do good, do good, do good, do good.
Lugar, to Africa.
Do good, do good, do good, do good, do good, do good.
Lugar, to Africa. Hey, hey, hey.
I wanna dance, dance, African style. Jump how we are jumping
down in Africa.
Dance how we are dancing
down in Africa.
Sweep how we are sweeping
down in Africa.
Da da ya, I be down, down, down. I wanna dance, dance African style. African dance to water, mam. Into you no Benin. Now all of us are one. Kalam Jamil filu garade. Lugarata Africa de lugarata be. Hizu hizu ma lugarata be. Kum 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 dugu dugu lugarata be. The dance all sweet and the rhythm all sweet. The pretty pretty girl from African sweet. Just turn around, look around, everything is sweet. Boom bakla, this a real shit, hot and sweet. Awe munda Joe.
We have been listening to Kawaja Revolution with the song African Style. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for being here. Please join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America.